Fair. It's Father's Day, right? But as you've heard me say multiple times, I believe that God's word is powerful. And I believe that you could teach a lesson for mothers and fathers could get something from it. Or children could get something from it. You could teach a lesson to 2 and 3 year olds and somebody can get something from it. So if we're listening and looking closely, I believe God's word will still speak into your life even if you're not a father today, if we're paying attention. I want to start reading from Isaiah 44 this morning, verse 12. Isaiah 44, verse 12. Says this, the blacksmith with the tongs works one in the coals, fashions it with hammers, and works it with the strength of his arms. Even so, he is hungry, and his strength fails. He drinks no water and is faint. Verse 13, the craftsman stretches out his rule. He marks out one out with a chalk. He fashions it with a plane. He marks it out with a compass and makes it like the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man, that it may remain in the house. Today I want to talk on the topic, God at work. We had our graphic that we've been sharing, and that's essentially the topic, God at work, right? And our theme for 2025 is a good work. Philippians 1:6 says, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Christ. The idea is that God has started a good work in you. It is a good work, and he will complete it, but we have to submit to him working in our lives, okay? Being that it's Father's Day, I'd be amiss if I didn't take a few minutes and talk about my dad. I'm very blessed. My dad has been a big part of my life. I think about the things I learned from my dad, and he usually listens to all these, so he's going to love you, Dad. Things I learned from my dad is, number one, my dad was a disciplined man. Number two, my dad was a generous man, more than I even knew. To this day, I still talk to people, and they're like, yeah, 30 years ago, your dad did this. I'm like, no idea. Sister Martha, generosity, what you were talking about this morning. My dad has a positive attitude. I rarely, and I get to see behind the doors, I rarely see my dad shaken. Rarely. Rarely get to see him shaking. He just is positive no matter what. He just burned his legs off pretty much, and he's like, it's going to be fine. You know, praise God, I'm going to church. You know, that's my dad. He's got a great attitude, you know. But one of the things that I learned from my dad better than all those things, those are all important, and I'm not saying any of these are more or less important, but one thing I picked up from my dad was work ethic. My dad was one of the hardest workers I knew. I rarely saw him in the morning. He was up early, 3 o'clock. He'd be praying, reading his Bible, and then he'd be going to work, and then he'd be home later at night, and my dad had an amazing work ethic. He was so good. He was such a hard worker. And I think about that as men. That's sort of a pride point at times, right? You know, our goal, we're called, we're told our job is to provide and protect and prepare and lead our families, right? And I would even argue that in some ways, men, I think we're designed to work. And maybe it's Adam's fault. Okay, because we were supposed to just chill in the garden and name the animals and kind of tend to the garden and do some stuff, right? But then God's like, well, because of Adam, and we would have done the same thing, I firmly believe that, the work, it's a little bit harder, right? And we've taken that, the fact that, well, it's our work to do, it's hard work, we're supposed to do that. And I think as men, we've taken that a little further, okay? And I'm just going to speak for myself, but maybe this is you too. We pride ourselves in saying, well, I work 70 hours a week. I'm the Tom Brady. I'm the first one in and the last one to leave. There was a time in my career where it was starting and I always felt behind. I didn't feel like I was smart as everybody else, and I probably wasn't, quite honestly. And I just felt like everybody's smarter than me. I got to get there before them so I can start. And I always try to be one of the first people in the office and one of the last people to leave. It's almost like we wear it as a badge of honor. When things are going tough and when there's a lot of work to do, it's like, look at all the work that I'm doing. And I think that that's sort of driven by society. Society kind of drives us. I think there's a tipping point that's happening right now in our culture, maybe with some of the younger generations in a good way, where it's challenging this older generation to be like, hey, is that really working out for you? Right? But either way, I think our culture has brought us this. Think of the phrases that I've heard in my life. Suck it up and drive on. First in, first out, last to leave. First in to work out, last to leave. Hard work pays off. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. No pain, no gain. Success doesn't come overnight. Real men don't quit. Men build, boys consume. Now, if you're a man or a father and you've grown up hearing these phrases your whole life, you feel compelled to work, whether you like to or not. And some of us, we run from that. And some of us run towards it. And maybe our work becomes our whatever. But it's natural that in society, that men and fathers, and it's just like work, work, work. And it's like, well, it's a badge of honor. It's where we find our value in some cases. And you know the other thing, and all these things about society, that's all true, but also did you know the Bible commands us to work? In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, it says, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." And so men, we sort of have that excuse, right? Well, it's, you know, I'm working so much. I have to work. Work is a good thing. I have to work because if I don't work, my family's not going to eat. You know, it's just, that's the Bible. I'm following God's word. And there's some truth to that. But this verse we read in Isaiah 44, I believe we see men at work in this verse. I believe we see men at work in these verses because it starts out talking about the blacksmith, and the second verse talks about the carpenter or the craftsman, okay? And it says this. Remember, I'm going to emphasize certain words. They're in there, but I'm emphasizing them. The blacksmith with the tongs works, one, in the coals. He fashions it with hammers and works it with the strength of his arms. Even so, he is hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and is faint. In the construction industry, this is called the quick trip breakfast. See, you know it. You know it. You've seen it. Scott, you've probably seen it, right? You've done it. Yeah, you stop by quick trip. You get your, yep, Brother James, you get it. You get your Snickers bar. You get your energy drink. You know, maybe a can of Pringles if you're lucky. You know, some guys get the two sandwiches, burgers, shove them in your lunchbox. And then you don't take the break at noon because why would you do that? Like you take your 15-minute paid break and you eat everything in that 15 minutes, just all that sugar and all that rush, and then you skip lunch because I don't need no lunch. And then you work all day long, sometimes for extra hours, sometimes to get out of there early, and you're just so much better off for it. Right? He drinks no water in his faint. Verse 13, the craftsman stretches out his rule. This is a carpenter, right? He marks one out with chalk. He fashions it with a plane. He marks it out with the compass. For those of you that are not carpenters, you know, I see Brother Graper here. Happy Father's Day, Brother Graper. He's a carpenter. He knows what I'm talking about. Like picking it out and taking a piece of wood and marking it out so you know what you're going to cut and how big you're going to cut it and what it's going to look like. And he makes it in the figure of a man according to the beauty of a man that it may remain in the house. So it's just telling us a little bit about the work that the blacksmith and the carpenter do. Now, something interesting here is this verse is Isaiah, but it's Isaiah's being a little sarcastic because the verse before this is God prophesying through Isaiah saying, I alone am God and beside me there is no other God. You should have no other gods beside me. Do not make any graven images. And then he starts saying, hey, you know, the blacksmith is out here building things. The carpenter is out here building things. Idols. So he starts over in verse 14 and he tells us a little backstory. We're hearing about the carpenter here. He cuts, we're seeing the work here, men, okay? I don't know what work you do, but you see the work here. He cuts down cedars for himself. He takes the cypress and the oak. He secures it for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants a pine and the rain nourishes it. Then it shall be for a man to burn, for he will take some of it and warm himself. Yes, he kindles it and bakes bread. Indeed, he makes a god and worships it. He makes it a carved image and falls down to it. He burns half of it in the fire. With this half, he eats meat. He roasts a roast and is satisfied. And he even warms himself and says, ah, I am warm. I have seen the fire. And verse 17. And the rest of it, he makes into a god. His carved image. He falls down before it and worships it. He prays to it and says, deliver me, for you are my God. The interesting thing about this story is that we're just describing two workers. I know plenty of, not blacksmiths of present day, I know plenty of iron workers. I know a lot of welders. I know a whole lot of carpenters. I'm in the construction business. I know a lot of these people. It's describing these people doing work. That's normal work. And in fact, it even says in verse 15 and 16, it starts talking about what he does with that. He gets the tree, he brings it down, and guess what? He provides for his family. He gets fire for warmth. Man, that's part of my job. I got to provide security for my family. I need to make sure there's warmth in my house that I can afford to keep the heater running in Wisconsin in January. Right? That's part of my job. He does that. That's really awesome. And he also uses that wood to build a fire to make food for his family so they don't got to eat raw meat or salads, Brother Rossing. So that they can have meat and it can be cooked over the fire. It says he makes a roast and he's satisfied. And it's so cool because I believe that's what we're called to do. I think that's what it's talking about in 2 Thessalonians 3:10 where it says, if you don't work, you won't eat. And so picture this carpenter that goes out into the forest and grabs this big log. And he's like, okay, because carpenters think ahead. That's why I'd never be a carpenter. He thinks ahead and he goes, okay, this portion I think would be great for firewood. And this portion, I'm gonna build some house with this. And this portion's here. And he starts working. And he builds his fire and he cooks his food and he gets his warmth. He's taking care of his responsibilities. But he keeps working. And with the rest of it, in verse 17, with the rest of it, he turns it into an idol. With the rest of it, he turns it into idols. What's happening is men, fathers, is we sometimes will turn our work into idols. It starts out as fire and warmth and food for our family. And then it's like, well, I got to work a little bit longer. I got to do a little bit of this. And then, well, it's for my family, Brother Peter. I want to do this for my family. I'm building this for my family. If you don't work, you don't eat. But what starts as responsibility, God-given, God-ordained, God-designed responsibility, quickly turns into idol-making. It quickly turns into something that they are putting above God. Something they are putting above their family. In fact, if we keep reading, this is the sad part, men. This is the part we got to remember. Verse 18, they do not know nor understand, for he has shut their eyes so that they cannot see, and their hearts so that they cannot understand. And no one considers in their heart, nor is there knowledge nor understanding to say, I've burned half of it in the fire. Yes, I have also baked bread on its coals. I have roasted meat and eaten it. And shall I make the rest of it abomination? This is Isaiah being sarcastic. He's saying, men, we start out with good intentions. We don't even realize, we don't even understand, verse 16, that by just continuing on in this path, we're going to make idols. He's literally, it's a joke. He's like, they start out saying, I've burned half in the fire. I've created bed. I've created roasts, all this stuff. I've created warmth. And now I think I'll just go make an abomination. He's showing us that no one's doing this by choice. No one's doing this because they're like, they start out with the idea. No, because they started out with the idea to make fire and to make food. It turned into, when there was leftover, what did he do with the rest? And they end up making an abomination. They end up making something an idol. They end up making their work above God. They end up making their craft above God. And I know, men, not everybody's in the trades. That's okay. They end up making their IT above God. They end up making their project management above God. They end up making their accounting work above God. You're not getting away because you're not an iron worker. And they don't even realize it. There's such a lesson here for us that says if we will continue the path of making work the priority, if it's about men doing work will turn into idols. It will turn into something you are putting above God. It never, more work never turns into more time with God. In fact, David knew this. In Psalm 62:12, he says, Also to you, O Lord, belongs mercy, for you render to each one according to his work. What you put into it, you're going to get out of it. You're going to work hard on that wood? That's what you're going to get out of it. You're going to work hard on that idol? That's what you're going to get out of it. God's going to let you have that. Revelation 22:12 says something similar. It says, behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me to give everyone according to his work. Rewards can be good or bad, depending on how you look at it. But where we choose to work, men, what we choose to do with the rest after we've fulfilled our God-given calling, responsibility, design, you'll be rewarded based on what you do with that. And so, men, what are you going to do with the rest? What are you going to do with the rest? What are you going to do with that time after you've provided for your family and after you've provided food for your family and protection and security? What are you going to do after that work is done? What are you going to do with the rest of what you have to offer? Because be careful, your work will turn into idols. The thing that you started doing to provide and protect will turn into something that you put above God, that you put above family, that you put above your marriage, that you put above parenting. I know it's tough, men, but sometimes we need to hear this. I have yet to receive real feedback as a man that didn't hurt. Because if it didn't hurt, it wasn't real feedback. The most impactful training moments in my life, and I still go through them, is when somebody gives me some real cold, hard truth, and I have to face that. That's okay, men, because God has designed us to be able to do that. And so what are we going to do with the rest? How many people were here Mother's Day? Oh, a good number of people. What did we talk about on Mother's Day? Yes, Michelle, idle work. And we kind of goofed off with two different words there, didn't we? How many people remember that? Idle and idol. Idol meaning I-D-O-L, I-D-O-L, an idol that we build. And idol, I-D-L-E, the idea of being idle and being with God. Today, we're going to do the same thing. Because we've been talking about what you're going to do with the rest all this time. But now I want to talk about, can we learn to rest in God? Can we choose to take what's left? Can we choose to take the rest of what we have to offer and bring it to God and rest in Him? Can we wait on the Lord to let Him do a work in us because we're finally saying, okay, I'm willing to put aside this work I'm trying to do, this extra work, and I'm going to let you do a work in me. I'm willing to rest in you, God. Habakkuk 1:5 says, look among the nations and watch, be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. I have met with men, I have counseled men. They're like, but I've got to do this for my family. I've got to do this to have a better marriage. I've got to do this to be a better dad. I've got to do this for blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but you're working 14 hours a day. So you're not a better dad. You're not a better husband. You're not a better family member. You're not even a good roommate. And I don't think it's wrong. I think it's just like these men in the story, the craftsman and the blacksmith. I think it's out of a good heart. It's like, I'm just trying to do what I need to do for my family. And we get caught up in the work, and with the rest of it, we turn it into more work, which turns into idols. And God's like, hey, could you take the rest of it and turning it into rest in me? Because I want to do a work in you. I want to work a work in your days, which you will not believe. You think you need to finish the rest by keeping working, but that's not what I need you to do. I'm going to do a work. I will work a work in your days. I love that verse because it throws work in there twice. And so, men, can we learn to sit? Period. No, I had an and in there, but it does make sense. Can we learn to sit and be with God instead of doing for God? James 1:3 says, knowing this, that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work. Let patience have its perfect work that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Practicing patience, men, practicing slowing down, practicing not being in a hurry, not trying to do all the work, will do a perfect work in your life. Can we allow him to work in us? Ephesians 3:20 says, Now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. Because as long as we're trying to create and work, we're not allowing God to work in us. In fact, when we're at work, it turns into idols. When we take the rest and let God work, he can do a great work, more than you can ask or think or know. Even God, the creator of the universe, knew what to do with the rest. Did you know the number 7 in the Bible represents completeness? It means it's done, it's complete. That's why there's 7 days of creation, there's 7 days of, there's all these different things in 7. They call it the perfect number, but it really means completeness. Is it interesting that God created the heavens and the earth and the birds and the plants and everything, but it wasn't complete until what? He rested. The 7th day was rest. Completeness happens with rest. But man, that doesn't make sense. Our brain doesn't compute that. I've got to keep working because if I work enough, I'll be complete. And God's like, I'm God and I need a day of rest. I'm going to have a day of rest, and I'm going to show you that rest is important. And rest is what makes something complete. Because we see it in Genesis 2, 1 through 3. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished, and on the 7th day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the 7th day. It didn't say his rest was his work. It says he ended work. Now I'm going to add some words here. He ended work. It wasn't complete, because 7 days is complete. He ended work, it wasn't complete, and he rested on the 7th day from all his work that he had done. Then God blessed the 7th day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. And then he commands us to do the same. Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the commandments, the 10 commandments. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. I'm not saying you should go work Saturdays, men. We're not talking about this. It's different. But the 7th day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. 6 days is to work, and the rest of the time is for your God. It's for you and God. Mark 2:27 says, it's funny because Jesus and his disciples are walking through the field on the Sabbath and they're like picking grain. Like they're just like walking past. It'd be like if you were walking through an apple orchard on a Sunday and they're like, oh, there's an apple. And you just pick it. You're like, I'm going to have an apple. And the religious leaders of the time said, what are you doing picking the grain? Why'd you grab that apple? I just grabbed it off a tree. I was hungry. You're doing work. Stop doing work. This is the other side of it where we legalize or it becomes a I don't remember the term, like legalization of this law. But Jesus' response is so interesting because they're like, the Sabbath, you got to keep the Sabbath. And he said to them in verse Mark 2:27, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. The Sabbath was created as a human benefit, a gift. The Sabbath is for us. The Sabbath is a good thing. The idea is rest. It's taking time to refocus and refresh and renew. God isn't talking about rules here. It isn't about tradition. It's about finding rest in him. And this is not a message about the Sabbath. I'm not telling you to go home and take a nap all day long. Okay? We're not going to get that stringent or that deep. What I'm saying is that when we are called to work, but we also need to have rest. And maybe it's on a full Sunday if you want to do that. Maybe it's saying, hey, I'm going to be a present dad and husband when I come home at night. Maybe it's saying, hey, I'm going to go out golfing with the boys because I need to refresh for myself. Don't always do that because then that's turning into your idol. So I'm not saying this is a message about the Sabbath. This is a message about the importance of rest. And saying you're going to work, but what are you going to do with the rest? And I'm saying rest in God with your time. Isaiah 40 verse 29 says this. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases their strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young man shall utterly fail. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Men, I think so often we're like, I need to do this. I need to do this. I need to be strong. I need to show my strength by my work. I need to show my value by my work. And God's like, can you just rest in me? Can you rest with your family? And if you rest with me, those that rest with the Lord, I'm tweaking it, those who rest with the Lord will renew their strength. And they will renew their strength. They will be stronger because of it. They will mount up with wings like eagles. You're flying higher than you ever flew before because you took some rest. You will run and not be weary because you took some rest. You will walk and not faint because you took some rest. Jesus took time to rest. Go read through the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And all you see God, Jesus ministering, right? But you see him going off by himself to pray. You see him going off by himself to fast, to think, to meditate. You just see him going off to rest. Jesus knew the importance of rest. There's a book I read recently called Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday. It's a great book. And in it, he describes other people. So these are not Jesus. They're below Jesus. But let me just give you some practical things that people that you know and how they approach this. Winston Churchill, when he was leading England in World War II, was known for taking a daily nap. In this book, Stillness is the Key, it explains how Churchill prioritized rest even during intense pressures of war. Because he understood that stillness and recovery gave him the clarity and energy to lead effectively. How many people ever heard of Mr. Rogers? When the episode starts, the episodes that are colored, there's a stoplight. What light is showing on the stoplight when it starts? Yellow. A flashing yellow light is on there. Mr. Rogers would retreat daily to a quiet place to reflect and recharge, allowing him to bring kindness and calmness to his work. Mr. Rogers knew the importance of resting and taking time to slow down. Everything, he would be going crazy right now with the way I preach because I talk really fast. Everything about his delivery, his shows was about slowing down and being there for children. And letting people know it's okay to slow down. His speech was slow. Martin Luther King Jr. often spent Sundays away from public life in quiet reflection and family time, treating it almost like a Sabbath to restore his spirit. In the book, Ryan Holiday notes that these breaks were critical for Martin Luther King Jr.'s resilience and ability to face constant opposition. Men, can we start valuing rest as much as we value work? Can we think about what we're doing with the rest and saying, maybe it's time for me to rest in God? I challenge you men to look at your schedules, maybe refill them out and start including rest and stillness with God in your schedule. I challenge you to start including rest and reconnecting with your family, your spouse, and your children in your schedule. I challenge you to start including rest and renewal and refocusing for yourselves in your schedule. Because it is in rest with God. I'm not talking about taking naps. Go ahead, take a nap. That's a good thing. I'm talking about being still and close in time with God, resting in him. Sister Martha, you read this verse this morning. I have it too. Matthew 11:28. Think of the craftsman. Think of the blacksmith. Think of the construction workers with their Quick Trip lunch. They're tired. It's busy. Verse 28, it says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Can we stand this morning? If you're a father this morning, if you have children, If you're a stepfather, foster father, adopted, doesn't matter. If you're a father, can you come down to the front if you're willing? If you can't stand, we'll make room for you on the front row. If you're a father, come stand down by the front. We're going to give you a chance to pray this morning. Or maybe just quietly reflect on what God's speaking to you. Come on down, get close. Let's make sure there's room for every father. This time is for you and God. It's not for you and your neighbor. Okay? This time is for you and God. It's not for you and your neighbor. Men, it's time for us to start finding our rest in God. It's time for us to start taking what's left, the rest of what we have to offer. And instead of turning it into more work and idols and things that are above God, it's time for us to start turning it into time with God. Matthew 11:28. I'm going to read it again and we're going to finish it out. It says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." You're working hard, man. Man, I'd be proud of it. I am proud of the hard work I do. You should be proud of the hard work you do. But let's not let it turn into idle work. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Men, Bishop Grant always used to tell us our three biggest priorities as humans, not just men, is God, the family, and the work of God. And that means the fourth is working. Maybe we got to flop some things over. Start making time with God a priority. Men, what happens is God has called us to make men, not to make idols. Men are called to make men, not idols. And so as we get ready to start to pray, I have one last verse, and this is a hard one to read. And then I want us to just start singing. Ezekiel 6:13, it says this, "Then you shall know that I am the Lord, when their slain are among their idols all around their altars, on every high hill, on the mountaintops, under every green tree, under every thick oak, wherever they offered sweet incense to their idols." I don't want to get to the end of my life, man, and just be laying with the idols I created. I don't want to be laying there dead around with having all these idols around me because I worked real hard. Let's take some time. What's God speaking to you today? Just you and God, start as they start to sing, start to talk to God, because the message he has for you is one of love. The one he has for you is one of rest. Rest in me. Come, you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest for your souls. God wants to give you rest here, man. Let's just take this moment. Just take your time. There's no rush. The donuts will be there. Just take some time resting in God right now. And if you're not a father or a man, maybe God's speaking to you too about resting in him. Maybe he's trying to show you the rest he has for your soul and your mind and your heart. Hallelujah, God.